Welcome back to Tin Can Alley. It's the podcast all about backyard baseball. I'm your host, Derek, and I'm here once again with Jordan, my brother and co-host. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. I am gearing up to play game three of the season today, and so that makes me pretty excited. It's a good day.
Yeah, nice. I haven't played game three yet either, but we have played all of week two's games in this season so far, and it's been a really interesting season. We have another data point to compare teams against one another, and there are a few things in here that I would love to talk about and pick your brain on. We also had a challenge this past week.
Yes.
On who could score the most stolen bases or who could steal the most. And that was a fun little twist. And then a couple of different statistical categories that we're keeping track of this year in order to compare player manager skill or roster strength, I guess, is another comparison point. Yeah. So lots of things to talk about in the season.
Great.
Anything of note happen baseball wise in the past week in your life?
The Reds won 5 times in a row and people are thinking we're the best ever. And I am just not that sold. That's where I'm at. I'm not sold yet. Check back in with me in another week and we'll see.
You were just telling me about how you had some kids over to your house and you introduced them to, let's call it a cousin of backyard baseball, Ken Griffey Jr. baseball on the Nintendo 64, right?
Yeah. So first, to be clear, I had an entire family over, not just some kids.
Good clarification.
I want to announce that on the internet very publicly. Yeah. And so these kids like don't necessarily play a lot of sports video games. And I just dug out the 64 because I was like, oh, this will be fun, I think. And they played till like past 10 at night. And then they came over the next day with their parents again and played the whole next night too. So if you don't have a Nintendo 64, shame on you. And if you do have one, you should have Major League Baseball featuring Ken Griffey Jr. It was a blast.
Spread the good word. How much do you think that like retails for today?
That game?
Yeah.
$10.
You think it's that cheap?
I'm going to do a little quick search right now. A little click.
All right. Click it.
But
click
I mean
around.
Like, it's not one of those titles that I think was super popular. I mean, then I'm trying to remember because we used to have that shop, that video outlet, whatever, near our mm-hmm. home, and they had a lot of old games. I'm trying to remember if I ever saw it there. I'm sure I did. I don't think it was very much. All right. Tell me what you got.
My guess would be $25 at least.
All right. Pre-owned, lowest price, $8.88.
You're kidding me. That blows my mind.
Yeah, so I'm seeing $12.99, $9.99, $14.99, $11.50. Oh yeah, baby.
Do yourself a favor if you don't have it and you do have a Nintendo, get yourself a copy. Play this game. It is it's superb. It's very good.
Hi, this is Ken Griffey Jr. Let's play Major League Baseball.
It's showtime. Call me Junior. Well, anyway, shall we now for the second week take it around the league?
Little week two roundup.
Here we go. Starting off in the National League, as you do, let's talk about the Reds and the Melonheads.
Yes.
So week one, the Reds kind of incorrectly played their game.
Yes.
And accidentally played in the wrong mode.
Yep.
They ended up with a loss either way.
Yes.
But they showed like they could hit the ball, at least in that first game.
In that first null game, yes.
Yeah. So they went back and replayed their game. Didn't fare as well. Ended up losing 1-5. And that was week one.
Yep.
So -4. Now in their second game, they only scored 3 runs against the CPU. And won their matchup against the CPU 3-1 for a score of 2. And the Melonheads won 3-0. So they end up beating the Reds 3-2 in a very close game. I expected the Melonheads to kind of walk all over the Reds, if I'm being honest.
Well, I think that this is not a great early sign for the Melonheads. Haven't had a lot of runs so far. I'd really like to see Jonah surge ahead a little bit here, but I was glad the Reds scored. Nice tight game. And I am excited to see the matchup week three, Reds versus Cardinals. I think Josh is going to find his stroke. Like, he's got a lot of power hitters again on that team. So I think that once he gets a hang of the difficulty level that we're playing with, I think he's going to do a little bit better. What I was really surprised to see was the Fishes score against the Pirates. They lost their player manager score. They lost -7 to the Pirates 0. So Jaden texted Pat and he said, "Your team hit 8 home runs against me. I've never seen anything like it." So he lost to the CPU 3-10. And if anything, Pat can rest easy knowing that his squad, when it's CPU controlled, is pretty dangerous. He, however, was tied in the 5th inning, scored 0, but then pulled out the backyard baseball win 3-2. So he doesn't get any kind of loss, but he didn't score as big as his squad did when it was CPU controlled. I don't know how that feels when the CPU plays better with your team than you do, but
I don't know. This is wild because this was our most anticipated matchup.
Oh, for this week. I predict to go 1-2 in the National League, and
right,
neither of them had a positive score at the end of the 5th inning. So,
wow.
If anything, it's tough to tell, because does it really just mean they both have great squads and playing each other's squads is just that tough? That may be more the case, but still, I would like to see more offense there.
Yeah, it's going to take a couple more weeks to figure that one out. But let's move on to the Astros versus the Cardinals. Now, I'm looking at the score sheet here. There are some extra numbers. It looks like the Cardinals took this into extra innings against their CPU opponent. Is that correct? Into the 9th.
Yep.
And these are typically 6-inning games. So the Cardinals ended up...
That was locked up.
...in the end of the 5th inning being tied. So their score against the opponent was 0. But they did in 9 innings win 2-1. So they beat the CPU. The Astros only won by 1 run, 2-1. So Astros take the victory over the Cardinals 1-0. Very close.
Yeah. I think that follows with some of my expectations. I love seeing the Astros win. It's hard to explain, but I don't think they have the best squad, so I like to see the Astros win. Oh, I think Captain America hit a home run in that game. That would be his custom player. So I think that was where the big scoring surge for the 2-1 victory came from. But I see the Rockies. They also lost to the Super Squad, to the likes of Jay Green, Leo Wayne, and the rest. So -4 against the CPU in his bye week game. That's tough. But the Pirates did the same thing the week before. The Orioles, however, in American League action, pulled out a win against that squad, winning 5-3. So that's nice to see. The American League is really taking it to the National League in the first couple weeks of this challenge. So again, we're just going to kind of take the scores of those to take a measurement, American League versus the National League. So American League leads 3-8 against this Super Squad.
Love to see it. Wow. We said that at the same time.
I know.
It's like we're brothers. This week, the stat that we were tracking for, what do you call this? Bonus points?
Challenge stat, like challenge week
challenge
stuff.
Challenge stat. Great. Yeah. Stolen bases. So the leading stolen baser team.
That's what we call them.
The National League was the Astros. They had 4 stolen bases, even though they only scored the 1 run.
Yeah.
Orioles in their matchup against the challenge team had 3, which is not a bad number.
That's pretty good. But the big story, yeah, the Indians versus the Angels. Yikes.
Indians, 8 stolen bases, first of all. Let's start there.
Okay.
Far and away, the most stolen bases of anybody this week.
That's Ricky Henderson with the bags. Yes.
Now, this is you. You
texted the Angels. Him. Yeah. So he played me this week. I scored 4 in this game, and he beat me 5-4 overall with 8 stolen bags. And I was really mad about this because I did some nifty things like draft and trade wise on purpose so that Larry Walker would be my catcher because his arm is deadly. So I was thinking nobody's stealing bases on me this season because I've locked this in. I texted him. First of all, he said he barely won this game. He was losing he was down, I guess. It would have been 4-3. Maybe that's right. And then he got like a screaming line drive home run and a couple other errors on my outfield. Got that other run in. So he won the game. And I said, how did you steal 8 bases on Larry Walker? He said, I steal basically every time. And Larry Walker threw out the first several base runners, but he eventually just wore him down. And he also said Pablo Sanchez got 3 on one play because he attempted to steal second and throw one into center field and stuff happened and he came all the way home. So more power to you. He said, that's my strategy almost all the time. I'm always stealing because I don't hit a lot of home runs. And so he made it work even against a great arm. So it made me think more about my strategy in sacrificing outs to wear down the catcher, but I don't know. He was glad it was that was the stat this week because he knew that was his game. He was going to probably take the prize,
and he did. And the Indians also, it's worth saying, they have a very fast team. I'm pretty sure the slowest person on their team is a 7, maybe a 6, but I think it's a 7. They got a quick team.
It might be Billie Jean Blackwood when she's hampered by the presence of Markey.
Yeah, so you're right.
There's that.
But overall, quick team. They take the victory.
And you got the victory over the Blue Jays.
I did not.
Oh, wait. Sorry. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
No.
You got the victory over the Athletics. Yikes. I'm still thinking Wasso's Wombats. You're the Bombers this year.
That's me.
Which was big. So go ahead. Go for it.
Big ol' win over the Athletics. I played my game first. I scored 7 runs and I won 7-0. So that was a huge, huge win for me because in the first round I lost against the CPU. So I was just happy with that. I didn't think I was going to actually beat Paul. I had a really good fourth inning. I think I scored 5 runs or something in the fourth. Things just worked out like the way that I had hoped they would. And we were not playing at Tin Can Alley.
How'd Sammy Sosa hit?
Sammy Sosa, I think he might have had a single. He has not been hitting very well for me. My most consistent hitter and RBI leader on my team is actually Randy Johnson, believe it or not.
Awesome. Incredible.
And then I guess I had enough oomph in my lineup to score 2 against Paul, and he only scored 3. So in the end, he did score 3 runs because he was up by 3 in the fifth.
Yeah.
But at the end of the game, he only won 3-2. So I come out with the victory 7-3 over Paul. 0 stolen bases for both of us, but that's fine. And I'm feeling good going into week 3. Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, Paul and the Athletics, they have not had a player manager win so far this season. That's been the biggest surprise so far. I talked with him a little bit. He said he feels like on draft night, he felt really good about his team. But he thinks in the end, he sacrificed a little bit too much offensively to make sure that his defensive roster was exceptional. And as it goes to show, you know, it's not like you got shut out by his team. You scored 7 runs and in the end he wasn't able to put a whole lot up. So I think he's going to figure it out. I think he's going to score more runs. Hopefully not this week because that's my matchup week 3, but the Wombats beat the Blue Jays 4-3. The offensive player of the week belongs to the Wombats, Mike Piazza. Went 2-for-2 with 2 home runs in that game. I love to see that. I like to see those slow power hitters carry a team and increase their draft value. Love that. And it was tough because the Blue Jays, they had a great effort from Kurt Schilling as well, even offensively, but it didn't, wasn't enough. So the Wombats, the rookie, John. He is looking pretty good right now. He's got his first player manager win under his belt in week two. And he was pretty excited when he saw that score roll in. I think the only thing I missed in this was that the defensive player of the week was Kurt Schilling of the Melonheads. So in that win over the Reds, Kurt Schilling threw a perfect game. Perfect game.
Incredible.
12 strikeouts. He also helped his own cause by going, I believe, 3-for-4 at the plate with a couple of RBIs. Great game for Kurt Schilling.
Wow.
And especially since Angelo DelVecchio is not on that squad. So he's stepping into that ace role just magnificently.
So that means the Indians with 8 stolen bases are the winner of this week's challenge.
They're the winner of this week's challenge.
What do they get?
Okay, so I'm keeping this stuff kind of a mystery. So okay. I'm buying something and just directly sending it to Tyler's house. And then when Tyler gets it, I'm going to have people, like, when they get their challenge prize, just text a picture of what they've got to the league. So I admittedly, I'm on the fence between a couple of things right now, but I'm going to get it in the mail today. And then we'll talk about it next time for future challenge weeks. So I've got some different ideas for different ones.
Okay. I'm left a little unsatisfied with that answer, but we'll move on. That's fine.
Sorry.
Let's talk about, now that we have 2 weeks in the bag, some league leaders in some of these categories.
Oh yeah. That's fun.
Offensively, Angels, Jose Canseco, that's you. You're doing pretty well, leading in RBIs and home runs, which makes sense.
Yep. 4 home runs, 6 RBIs for Jose Canseco through 2 games. He's absolutely magic. The only thing I don't like about doing these league leaders is I feel like, man, Jose Canseco, he's got to be getting some attention. It's like every year is a contract year, you know, and it just makes things more competitive for next year's draft. But in any case, Mike Piazza then is the only other multi-homer player with his week 2 performance. And then you just got a handful of players with 1 home run. I hope that kind of changes. Stolen bases leader, Pete Wheeler of the Cardinals. No surprise there. Yeah, but I think the other thing is that there are 3 players from the Indians on that list. Pablo Sanchez with 5 stolen bases, Jeter with 4, Bonds with 4. So again, the Indians, that's kind of their games and their game. And they've got 3 representatives on that list.
On the defense side, there's really only one category at the moment that we can talk about, which is strikeouts. Mr. Clanky with the Cardinals is leading that category in the league with 21.
Yeah, impressive. 21 through 2 games, pretty good.
I'm assuming he pitches all of the innings for that team since getting tired. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Second is Frank Thomas for the Wombats, trailing only by 1 with 20. And again, he was not the one with the perfect game, right? But that's a rookie team, the Wombats. And so having 20 strikeouts in the first 2 games is impressive.
And then it's funny, Randy Johnson, Bombers. Randy Johnson, Astros. How many innings has Randy Johnson thrown for you?
Randy Johnson's thrown all of my innings.
Awesome.
He had 10 strikeouts in the first game and 4, I think, against the Athletics. I let them hit the ball a little bit more since I was in a bigger field.
And then we've got some different categories that we're going to start tracking this week, but it was just seemed kind of dumb the first 2 weeks to track wins and ERA because we were going to have everybody with kind of the same number. Same thing with average. So after this week, we'll have batting average leaders and ERA and wins. Pretty excited because then we'll see if we have any triple crown campaigns going. That's what I'm excited to see. I'm curious because you can see everybody's team batting averages to see where some of those team leaders in batting average come out. Because you see a lot of team averages below 500. I think it's a little lower than I thought. But
let's talk about week 3 matchups that we're looking forward to real quick.
Okay.
You mentioned Cardinals-Reds. What's exciting about that one for you?
I think what's exciting about Cardinals-Reds is I still consider Josh as a little bit of a wild card here. I think Josh can hit, and I want to see it. I want to see his hitting get better, and I think that week 3 might be the week that you start to see it.
Yeah, I'm looking at Indians versus Wombats, two teams that haven't lost yet, going up head to head, not really knowing where either team stands. And so one of those teams is going to come out as the American League leader, and that's going to be an exciting matchup.
No challenge week this week, but there is one next week. And I'm willing to use the podcast right now as the venue to announce the challenge stat for that thing. And that is defensive errors.
Is this a high number or low number that people are going for?
This one, it's low number. So
okay.
Whoever has the fewest errors on defense, and then we'll use a tiebreaker. We'll see, because I don't know, maybe I got to decide what we do for ties in this case, but I feel like everybody's gonna have at least one, right?
That's around the league. Jordan, how do you feel about traveling around the world in 80 days?
What's my mode of transportation?
Aircraft powered by a lighter than air balloon.
So something like a hot air balloon?
Yeah, or maybe even a Zeppelin or a blimp. Like a blimp.
Sounds exciting. Let's do it.
Great. Let's go.
Derek, what brings a blimp to mind? What have you been hitting home runs in backyard baseball?
I mean, as you can see, I've hit no home runs yet this season. I've been the observer of a few home runs, but it got me thinking about how odd it is that there is a blimp in this, let's call it a little league series or backyard baseball game.
I am shocked that we did not include a discussion about the blimp in our backyard baseball universe theories. As far as all of the different factors that you're trying to reconcile in order to make backyard baseball work, it seems like the blimp would warrant some space in that discussion. But before we do that, just generally, the blimp, it is an incredible celebratory thing that happens on home runs in backyard baseball. But it doesn't happen in normal baseball. Like, you have some, you know, shots of a blimp sometimes in these really big postseason games. But I would even say that blimps are not a baseball thing. Like, they're definitely a bigger football thing than they are a baseball thing. But here you are in backyard baseball. Every time you hit a home run, a blimp flies across the screen. There's some text that says home run, and then a little animation of a house with feet. It scampers across the screen. And the blimp goes from right to left, and the music plays from your particular player. And you get that every time you hit a home run in backyard baseball.
I think what makes this even more special and incredible, spectacular, if you will, are the facts about real life blimps that you have to wrap your mind around first before we actually talk about the extravagance going on in this league. If you had to take a stab at how many blimps are in the world right now, not even ones that are flying, just in existence, how many would you guess?
700.
The actual number is 25.
Yikes.
There are 25 blimps in the world. All right. So if you take that fact and then also recognize that in this league, not only is there one blimp flying for every home run, each blimp that flies is customized to the team it's flying for.
I know.
Every team has a personal blimp that they fly for home runs.
And I didn't even notice that. How dumb is that? I did not notice that until we started talking about this and I started looking at blimp things. The whole time I'd been playing backyard baseball as a kid, I'd never noticed that the blimp that flies across the screen is the same colors as the team that I was playing as.
Yeah, that's your team blimp. That's yours.
Which means every time you do a single game and you choose your colors for your custom team, yeah, a blimp shows up and it's ready. It's ready every time you hit a home run.
The real question is, when you're choosing those colors, are you also repainting a blimp for your team, or are you manufacturing a new blimp, or are you pulling the coordinating blimp out of the warehouse? I think there's, you know, implications either way you look at it.
So I think that there's some operative questions we have to answer. One, is this a full-size blimp or is this a toy blimp? And then, like you said, how many blimps are we talking about? And so for one thing, if you look at the shadow of the blimp, you can't make the argument that this is like forced perspective where it's a little teeny blimp flying closer to the camera, because the shadow is I think it's a little smaller, but it's close to the same size and it's directly under the blimp. So the perspective would make you think that the blimp that's flying is about 45 feet long, like kind of like the length of a little league base path.
Yeah.
Flying across and flying like 20 feet above the kids' heads.
Yeah.
There are a lot of problems here in normal life things, some air travel restrictions. I don't think, the Air Force base, wherever the nearest one is happy about this. But it's certainly not like a full-size blimp. It's a much larger than a toy blimp, but it's not like a little remote controlled one, teeny one.
No,
but so it's one that has a giant video screen on it. So
the average blimp size, right? If we research this extensively,
research
with a lot of time and thought, the average blimp size is about, let's say, 190 feet long.
I think that's probably good.
We're dealing with like a quarter scale blimp here, right?
Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah.
So
about a quarter scale blimp.
It would seem to me that it would be more of a personal aircraft rather than like a commercial, like people transporter aircraft. So I think my guess would be it's one person aircraft flying this blimp at a quarter size, but still larger than a remote controlled blimp.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Do you watch the blimp fly every time you hit a home run, or do you hit the escape key and skip it?
To be honest, I hit the escape key a lot.
You're messed up.
I also haven't hit any home runs.
I made the commitment because, you know, there's enough stuff that you skip through that when I hit a home run, I'm going to watch it fly. I stand up from my seat and I do a little dance to the music every time I hit a home run, because you might as well. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's all about hitting home runs in backyard baseball. And so I don't think you should skip the blimp. Somebody went through a lot of trouble, whether you're talking about within the game or the people designing the game, to make sure a blimp flew across the screen to celebrate your home run. I don't think you should skip it.
Maybe next time I hit a home run, I won't.
You shouldn't. I think some interesting features of this home run blimp are it does have that, the passenger compartment on the underside with 9 windows, but there's nobody in there. It's so tiny. I don't think anybody's flying like that. I think that for my backyard baseball universe theory, I don't have to stretch as far as you, because for me, it is a matrix reality. And for you, I'm not sure if you could quite say that. I think that the blimps are, I think they're within the matrix. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they're controlled by Mr. Clanky via radio control. I don't know. It might be a glorified like RC blimp. And then, you remember the part in the Matrix where they're just, you know, choosing outfits and colors and things like that. This is pretty easy for me, but I don't know about your robot theory, how that works.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that we live in a universe where it's easier to explain the Matrix than it is a small army of robot children. Mm-hmm. But here we are. To be honest, I haven't put a ton of thought into how I would fit this into my theory. But if I had to, I mean, off the cuff, I want to say pretty much everything in this league is a construct of Mr. Clanky's doing. So he would be the one to construct said blimps. I think inside the blimp is a harder question to answer. I'll go with generic robot pilot.
There's another robot inside the blimp.
Why not? If everyone else is robots,
it's not a stretch.
Why can't there be another robot, you know?
I was trying to think if there was anything to the fact that when you're a custom player or a computer-generated custom player, whatever, we still need to come up with a better name for those, that there's no music. It just flies with a little whirring noise across the screen.
Actually, I didn't
unceremoniously.
Know that. Really?
Yeah. No, there's no music. It just goes. Yep. Which is, I think it's demoralizing when Julie Dunkel takes you yard and you just have to silently watch the blimp fly. You know, there's no music. It's mm-hmm. You just think about it. I think it's funny.
It is funny.
It's one of those things. This thing is so off the wall. And the fact that we hardly notice it anymore is stranger still. It would be something I'm sure the first time we ever played, it was just strange and awesome. But you play a kid's game long enough, and when you think about all the things that make it special and interesting, I was surprised it took us this long to consider the blimp any more than we have.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't even register that it happens anymore.
Because obviously, it comes across the screen and you just hit escape and skip it.
Yeah.
You just tell it to fly faster.
That's true. But I mean, the fact that it has a giant scoreboard on the side that says home run, the fact that it's like the team colors plays, well, I guess it doesn't play music. Is the blimp playing the music, or does the music play in the stadium as the blimp flies?
I don't know. I feel like the best explanation would have to be that music comes from the blimp, only because these other places, where is the sound coming from? Mm-hmm. If they're playing all over the neighborhood and everybody has walk-up music, and we already know there's a blimp on standby from each team, you know, there's 2 blimps over there.
Yeah.
That's probably where all the audio is coming from. So it is a fully equipped multimedia floating phenomenon. I don't know how to even describe that further. I think the funny thing also was that it's not a backyard baseball staple that then is all over all the backyard sports games.
I was just going to ask.
And that's what I was saying is it's not a baseball thing to have a blimp. It's a football thing. There were, I think, later iterations of backyard football that had a blimp in the sky in the background. So it's not a one and done kind of thing, but it's not like, there's not an equivalent, I don't believe, of the blimp in backyard baseball in those other games. There's just a lot more freedom for imagination in this game, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I find really interesting is going back to the original creation of the game, trying to answer the question, why a blimp? You know, of all the things that you could do when you hit a home run, why is it that they chose to have a blimp in the team colors fly across the screen instead of even just like a graphic, like pop up or any number of things?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could make the argument. It's a pretty easy thing. The animation is as, I don't know, it's as simple as you get other than the scoreboard animation on it. But the thing just moves on the x-axis. I don't think there's any perspective change. It just goes from right to left. You play music, so it seems exciting. But, you know, nothing else other than an oblong shape going from right to left, and there you go. I don't know. I hope it wasn't lazy. It didn't seem intellectually lazy. Just, I guess, of the things you could do instead of saying, all right, we're going to animate this whole sequence or whatever. You just have a blimp fly across the screen. Perfect. I'm guessing it's kind of, it was somewhat necessity. When someone hits a home run, they have to run all the way around the bases. And that's generally not very exciting if you're just waiting for it to happen. So they figured, okay, we'll have something fly across the screen that takes roughly the same amount of time it takes the person to run around the bases. And there you go. That's how we got the blimp. That's the authoritative story now.
Still a lot of questions, I think, considering blimps cost around $40 million. And they can only fly at
roughly... million dollars? Did you just say that?
It's an expensive airship you got there, bro. Not cheap to fly a blimp.
Oh my goodness. I feel... I'm starting to question at $40 million what a blimp is really for.
I think that's why there's only a few of them left. I think everyone else has come to that realization. Why are we doing this? And they've...
Goodyear is just like... off. I don't know. It's our thing. So we're in it this deep. So our thing is the $40 million thing that flies in the air. It's a big commitment, but that's us now.
Well, if you have $40 million laying around or any other theories or questions about the blimp, you can always email us at asktincanalley@gmail.com. Who knows what the next thing is that we'll be surprised by, that we remember, that we've overlooked in this game, that's just as incredible as a blimp flying across the screen. Only time will tell.
Is it bad to tease what we're going to talk about next week?
No, I don't think so.
Now, where we might be tempted to overlook the blimp, next week's conversation, you can't overlook it. You can't unhear it. It, in fact, is tied to the blimp, and maybe it's the reason nobody notices the blimp. Music inside of backyard baseball. All of it is going to be part of our conversation next time. Don't miss it. You can't.
More music than you can shake a stick at, and week 3 matchups. We'll see you back here next week on Tin Can Alley.